Machinecast Monthly, Episode 1, Kitchen Table Foundry. Hello, and welcome to the first real episode of Machinecast Monthly. I'm your host, Brian Drake. First thing I want to do is apologize for not getting this episode out sooner. I unfortunately came down with the flu at the end of last month and haven't been able to do any recording because, well, I've been hacking up a lung every 5 minutes, and I don't think anybody wants to hear that. I know I certainly didn't want to do it. Before I get into the main topic of this episode, I'll go over some interesting stories in the news. There's not really a lot, it being the end of the year and all. No, everybody seems to just shut down and wait till the beginning of next year before they do anything. As I record this, they still haven't made up their mind if they're going to bail out the car companies or not. I know many people are in favor of it, many people are against it, and I'm not going to take a stand one way or the other. But the slowdown that we're having in the economy is such that even the Japanese are shutting down their facilities for a while because they don't have enough work for them. Toyota has stopped construction on their plant in Mississippi that they were going to be building the Prius in. Nobody knows what's going to happen with that, although since the plant was almost complete, they figure that everyone's going to that Toyota is eventually going to do something with it. Really interesting piece of news. There's a scientist who works at Harvard and a few other places, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the name because it's totally unfamiliar to me how that should be pronounced. But they figured out how to make a foam out of steel in the casting process, and this is supposed to be a lightweight, cheap process, and one of the applications they're talking about is putting it behind bumpers in cars. Now, let me quote here from the article about how it would work. Rough traffic accident calculations show that by inserting two pieces of the composite metal foam behind the bumper of a car traveling 28 miles per hour, the impact would feel the same to passengers as the impact if they were traveling at only 5 miles per hour. Unfortunately, the article doesn't really go into details about how they do it, but it does give some of the characteristics and a few other little things about how they tested the metal. The next item I have isn't really news, it's just something kind of neat. One of the guys that works for Pixar, those are the people that make the movies like WALL-E, Toy Story, and a bunch of others, his name is Jay Schuster, and his dad was a designer at GM, and this guy's hobby is he buys scrap aircraft parts and makes furniture out of them. And I mean, you really need to see the desk, because I don't know what parts he got or where he got them from. It looks kind of like something made with the leftovers from Skylab. It's a neat-looking desk, and you know, if you work with metal, you'll be able to appreciate what goes into it. And really, you know, things like this, just about anybody who plays with metal ought to be able to make something like it. Now, I've got links to this and a few other things on the website. You just go to machinecastmonthly.com. Click on podcasts, and then it'll take you to the page where there's links. The other thing that is probably biggest news for the home folks is that Google is part of their plan to scan every book and, well, probably every printed thing and get it up on the web, has just put up all the back issues of Popular Science and Popular Mechanics. Now, I know the magazines aren't all that great these days, but from the 1920s, well, actually from about when they started printing them, until about the mid-1960s, they had all kinds of projects in there for home machinists and metal workers. unfortunately, you cannot download the entire issue to look at it, but you can get a good look on their website of the pages in an issue. So if there's, you know, a project that you're interested in, you'll be able to get enough from there to do it. Now, I've heard that there is software out there that'll let you download the page, or the, not the page, but the whole magazine. I haven't played with it, so I can't tell you if it's any good or not, and I don't remember the name at this point, and I haven't been able to find where I saw it again. But really, if you're just interested in getting a few pages, all you have to do, if you've got a Windows machine — I don't know how to do it if you've got a Mac, but if you've got a Windows machine, you just hit the print screen button on your keyboard, then that does a screen capture of the page of what's on your desktop, and then you paste it into the Paint program, and you can crop and clear out all the extraneous stuff that way. It's not exactly fast, but it's not so slow that you don't want to do it. And if you don't find a project you're interested in, it's always fun reading the articles talking about how, you know, a flying car is coming in just 10 years, and if you dig back through, you can find out they've said that about every 10 years or so. Okay, now, if I've done this podcast right, it'll be an enhanced podcast, and you'll get a PDF along with it. Unfortunately, because I don't know too much about these here computer thingies, I won't know until I post it if it all works the way I think it's going to work. So, if you get this through iTunes and there's no PDF showing up, just go to the website, click on the podcast link, and there'll be a link for you to download the PDF. The PDF has the parts list, has sources for the metal, and has photos of my setup and some of the things I've done. I did. Now, I didn't really do anything all that sophisticated with this, because at the moment I don't have that much metal to work with. So all I had was a couple of coils of lead-free solder, and so I used that just to melt down and get it into an ingot form that it'll be easy to play with. I plan on doing a few things in the future, but I haven't quite made up my mind. It all depends upon my finances and how much time I have. Now, the types of metals I link to are all lead-free. I know there's plenty of people out there who are old-timers who swear up and down that lead's the best thing in the world to play with when you're learning how to melt metal. But the guys that aren't worried about lead poisoning are usually the guys that talk about the aliens working with the government to control our minds. So I'm not saying the lead does that, I'm not taking any chances. And while I do call this the kitchen table foundry, you really probably don't want to do this on your kitchen table or even inside the house, especially if you're married, because your wife's not going to be happy. I did it inside the house, and I regretted it almost immediately, because the stuff did smoke a bit, and yes, I do live in Tennessee, where it doesn't get exactly what one would call cold if you're from, say, Wisconsin, but it does get cold enough that I really hated having the windows open to ventilate the house after I did it. And I know there's books out there that'll tell you how to build a foundry to melt steel or aluminum or just about any metal you can think of, but speaking as someone who's poured metal professionally, you have to start out with the cold stuff before you start with the hot stuff, because you're going to get burned. Sooner or later, you're going to get burned, and how you react to being burned determines how badly you get burned. When I worked in the professional foundry, I got burned every day, and we wore all the safety equipment, but just because the stuff splatters like water splatters when you're pouring it, you wind up with it on you, and you learn to ignore the little pinprick stuff, but it gets about the size of a raindrop or larger, and it grabs your attention pretty quickly. I had that happen to me one time. It was 2 weeks after I started on the pouring crew at the foundry. I was holding my end of the shank, and we were letting the guy pour the steel into the ladle, and I saw this drop pop out of the ladle, and it just started arcing towards me, and I'm like, oh, that's going to burn me. Sure enough, it did. It arced over my head, went in the gap between the collar of my foil coat and my neck. Now, it didn't hit me right away. It traveled in between my shirt and the inside of the coat until it hit my belt. As soon as it hit my belt, it went right into the small of my back. I stood straight up and started screaming, and as much as I wanted to drop my end of the shank and run, I knew I couldn't do that, because if I did, then it would just sprayed metal all over the place and everybody would have got burned. So I waited till the furnace operator grabbed it from me. Then I tore off away from the pouring area, stripped off my gear, and started digging hunks of my back out. They poured that heat, not that whole heat, but that ladle out into the molds. And then the furnace operator comes back around to where I'm at, and I'm leaned over some stuff we have piled back there, panning. And he looks at me, he says, are you going to come back? Are you done? And, well, I didn't want to be thought of as being a wimp, so I nodded that I was coming back and put my gear back on and spent the rest of the heat in agony. And because of where it was located, it took about 3 or 4 weeks for it to heal up, because it was just right on the spot where my belt would rub up against it. So, you know, take it from me, getting burned is not a lot of fun, and anything you can do to reduce your risk is a good idea. But most importantly, when you do get burned, know what you're going to do with the metal. Have your work area cleared so that you can set it down quickly but safely and get the metal off you before it gets too serious. Okay, the setup that I've described in my list, if you have to go out and buy everything, it'll probably set you back about $70, but I actually had most of the stuff on hand, so it didn't cost me anywhere near that. And the final price is really determined by what you use and how much you have on hand. I gave you the low price if you have to buy everything and you just buy the cheapest stuff, and I gave you the high price if you have to buy everything and you buy some of the expensive stuff. Now, I used plaster of Paris for my molds, just because where I live it's and kind of hard to get good sand this time of year for doing sand castings. And I don't really have a lot of experience with sand casting. At the foundry, we mainly did lost wax casting, or investment casting, as they called it. And the safety equipment, and by the way, I take absolutely no responsibility if you do all this and burn yourself. It's dangerous. It's fun, but it is dangerous. So you're on your own. Don't come crying to me if you set yourself on fire. Now, I didn't pour anything really sophisticated in terms of molds this time around, although I have done that in the past. Since I was using coils of solder that I had laying around, I wanted to get them melted down into just an ingot or two so that they would be easier to work with, because the coils I had filled up the measuring cup that I use for a ladle on this. And even some, though I've got 2 years experience pouring steel, aluminum, bronze, and other things, I actually made a couple of mistakes while I was doing this, so I'll mention them to hopefully keep you from making them. Now, what I did is I took the pie pan, mixed up some plaster, poured a thin layer of the plaster in the pie pan, let it harden, and then I took the other measuring cups, because unfortunately when I bought them, bought the one that I needed, it came with all these other little sizes that I didn't really want. So I took those, coated them with Vaseline so that when the plaster that I poured around them hardened, I could get them out without damaging the plaster. And I set those around, as you can see in the photo, set those around in the pie pan, and then I filled that up with plaster, not completely, but enough to give about half an inch or so worth of plaster on top of that bottom layer that had already set up. Now, one of the nice things with the pie pan is if you lift it up and tap the bottom of it lightly, that'll smooth the surface out on it. So if you've got really complex things so if you've got large objects sitting in there like I had, you can get a smooth surface without disturbing them. I didn't really need to do that, but I was kind of playing around with it. Now, you need to let the plaster sit for however long the directions say. I let this sit for about 2 hours before I pulled the measuring cups off of it. The mistake that I made after I pulled the measuring cups out of it was I went ahead and melted the metal that I had and poured it in one of the pockets. What I should have done is either let the plaster sit overnight to completely dry out, or put it in the oven and heat it up for a while to drive out any of the moisture that remained in it. And I realized my mistake when I went to pour the metal into the pocket and it immediately started bubbling up and splattering all over the place. Fortunately, I didn't have too bad of a disaster with it, but it did make things a bit interesting, however, until it cooled down. And unfortunately, instead of ending up with a pig or ingot that looked like a hockey puck, well, it's kind of this bubbled mass. If I had just allowed the plaster to finish drying out, it would have come out much better. So, remember that. And while I used a propane torch, you could actually do it with a hot plate or something like that to heat the metal up and meld it. You don't want to get it too hot because it'll vaporize and you don't really want to inhale a lot of it no matter what you're melting. Not to mention that makes more oxidized material on the surface of it that you have to skim off. And if you're going to use a round pie pan like I did, it'll probably take you about 4 cups of plaster to fill the pie pan. The solder doesn't take any time at all to melt. I had 2 coils. I put them both in there at the same time, and they were melted and ready to go in around a minute or so. If you want to cast something like an ornamental object, you can use either a two-part or an open-face mold, like I did. If you're really good at this, you can use a multi-part mold. I am not at that point yet, so I'm not even going to discuss that. I will discuss how to do an open-face mold and how to do a fairly simple two-part mold. I don't have any photos of how to do a two-part molding. Those will come in a future episode of the podcast. Now, with anything that you cast, it has to have a slight taper to it, or what they call a draft. This is just so that you can slip it in and out of the mold easily. Although, if you're doing a lost wax casting, that's not really necessary, because then you just melt the wax out of the plaster or ceramic mold and you don't have to worry about it. But if you're going to do something like I did and put an object that you can't destroy as a pattern in the mold, then it either needs to have a straight sides to it so it can easily be pulled out of it, or it needs to have, like I said, a draft, which is a slight taper, with the smallest part of the taper being at the lowest point in the mold. Now you're probably going to want to put a thin layer of plaster down at the bottom of the pie pan and let that harden before you actually put the object in there. Depending on the shape of the object, that may or may not be practical, but it takes about a cup to get a good layer across the bottom of the pie pan that gives you enough plaster that when it solidifies, you can put a small object down in there and it won't sink all the way, it won't be on the bottom of the pan, but it won't be so far out of the top that you can't get it covered with plaster where to the level it needs to be. And whatever you put in the plaster, you need to coat with a thin layer of Vaseline or oil or something like that, so that when the plaster solidifies, you'll be able to pull it out of there without damaging it too badly. Sometimes, no matter how careful you are, when you pull it out of the plaster, it sticks to part of the plaster and brings that with it, so you might mix up a little bit to patch it, or you might just have a little extra sanding of your finished object. And I would not do anything, say, structural with the stuff that you cast in this thing. Just use it strictly for decorative items, because anything you melt at a low temperature like this is gonna be a fairly soft metal when it's solidified. And I have no idea what the strength is or if this makes some kind of inherent weakness in the casting, so you just use it for decorative items. Now, before you put the object in the plaster, you want to have something on it to make it easy to extract when the plaster's hardened, because otherwise you have to get in there with a little tool and pry it out, and that's a good way to damage the mold. And you can expect a little bit of shrink to happen sometimes, even in the non-shrinking plaster. So it's going to be tight getting it out the pattern out of there anyways. Once you've gotten the pattern out of there and you've heated the mold up to drive any moisture out of it, or allowed the plaster to sit long enough for that to happen, you can start pouring your metal. No matter what you use to hold the metal in, whether it be the soup ladle or a metal measuring cup or some other thing like that, I recommend you wear gloves and safety goggles so that if something goes wrong, you don't get burned as badly as you would if you did it without the gear. Now, as I said, it doesn't take but about a minute or so to melt the stuff, and you're going to get a layer of scum on top, which is oxidized material and just oils and crap that were on the metal. You'll need like an old spoon to scrape the dross off and somewhere to put that. And then once you've got that scraped off, you can go ahead and pour the metal. You'll need to pour it slow. It's kind of a trick you have to get the hang of. You want to pour it slow enough that it doesn't splatter all over the place, but not so slow that you wind up with the stuff on the bottom solidifying while you still got stuff pouring down on top of it. Then once you've got that poured in to the mold, just need to let it sit for a few minutes or longer, depending on how much metal you've poured in there. The hotter it is and the more of it there is, the longer it's going to take to cool. Once you've got it poured and it's cooled and you want to pull it out, you can either pry it out carefully if you want to try and save the plaster, because that is reusable at times, or you can just shatter the plaster and pull the part out. The solder I used didn't seem to shrink so very much, so it was still kind of tight, and the the slug mold that I used, but other metals may shrink when they cool. Some of the metals that I link to, they will actually shrink initially when they cool, but then expand a bit. And you're probably going to have some plaster sticking to it apart when you pull it out of there, even if you do it really gently. When you're doing sand, you have some leeway with it because, of course, the sand breaks apart, but with plaster, you're not going to have that. The nice thing about using plaster as opposed to sand is that your surface finish in plaster is a lot cleaner than it would be in sand, and you can capture details better than you can in sand. Sand, however, is a lot easier to reuse than plaster, but when you get your part out of the plaster, you just sand it down a little bit to clear off any rough edges, and you're good. Now, that works for an open face mold. For a two-part mold, that's a little different. With a two-part mold, you have to be worried about what's going to be the halfway point of the mold, because both sides are going to need a draft to them in order for you to get the mold apart, to get the pattern out. Forget about trying to get out the casting at this point. You won't even get that far if you don't have proper drafting to be able to get your pattern out. So I'm going to assume that you're using a pie pan again, and you're casting a fairly small object, say a ball, just for easy description. The first thing you're going to want to do is put a thin layer of plaster in the pie pan, let that solidify, so that gives you a base for the next part. Then you put you take your ball, coat it with oil or Vaseline, set it in the pie pan, and fill the pie pan to halfway on the ball with plaster. You let that plaster harden completely. Then, and this is a real fun part, you have to coat the surface of the plaster and the ball with Vaseline. This will keep the plaster that you pour in on top of it from solidifying. Also, you're going to want to put a funnel or something on top of the ball so that you have a way to get the metal in there. Now, you could always drill into the plaster after it's hardened until you hit the ball, but that runs the risk of actually damaging the pattern. And you have to make sure that the first layer of plaster that you've got in there, the ball, is completely coated with Vaseline. There's no gaps or any of that, because if you do that, when you pour the top plaster on there, it'll bond to any spots that you've missed with the coating of oil or Vaseline. And that can destroy your mold when you're trying to get it apart to get the pattern out of it. You could also put a layer of, like, say, paper, say wax paper or something, on top of the plaster, cutting around the ball or whatever you're using for your pattern, and then pouring plaster on top of that. But you wind up still having to coat the areas around the ball, because you'll never, of course, be able to get the paper to be a perfect match around the hole for the ball. And you have to coat the ball with the Vaseline, because otherwise the plaster will stick to it and you'll damage the mold considerably when you pull the ball out. So once you've got all that done, you pour your plaster in on it, let that harden, and then you flip the pan over to pull the mold out, open it carefully, take the pattern out, close it back up, and then put it in the oven to heat it up to get the moisture out of it, if there's any in there. I would imagine that if you let the mold sit for about 24 hours, it would get most of the water out of there. But you won't hurt anything by heating the mold up to make sure that you've driven all the water out of it. And if once you start pouring hot stuff, well, hotter stuff like aluminum or steel, it's a good idea to heat the mold up anyways, because when you pour the hot metal in there, if you're pouring it into a cold plaster shell, the rapid expansion will shatter your mold and spray everywhere with metal, which is, of course, not what you want. Okay, I think that's enough to get you started. Like I said, you want to be careful. And I know I didn't give much of a description of being able to do anything significant with it in this podcast. I will do that in a future episode. Hopefully, I'll have something more with the foundry next episode. It all just depends on my schedule and my finances at this point in time. If you've got any questions or comments, feel free to email me at machinecastmonthly@gmail.com. Those of you who are familiar with the microblog Twitter can follow me there. Just go to twitter.com/machinecast. Now let's go make some chips.